Welcome to B2B Marketers on a Mission, a podcast for changemakers where we question the conventional, debunk marketing myths, provide actionable tips, think differently, disrupt industries, and take your marketing to a new level. From improving your campaigns to making you a better marketer, these are the inspirational stories that will help us change the way we think and approach B2B marketing one conversation at a time. This podcast is brought to you by Einblick Consulting, helping you to stand out in the market and drive revenue to your B2B business. And now your host, Christian Klepp. All right. Welcome everyone to this episode of B2B Marketers on a Mission. This is the show where we help you to question the conventional, think differently, disrupt your industry, and take your marketing to new heights. This is your host, Christian Klepp, and today I am joined by someone on a mission to help B2B companies up their game with SEO and web design for revenue, not vanity. So coming to us from Yeovil, England, Mr. Sam Dunning, welcome to the show.
Hey, Christian. Thanks for having me on, man. Looking forward to it.
Really looking forward to this conversation as well, Sam. And shout out to Linda Malone. Thank you so much for the introduction. So let's just dive in here because I'm going to say that, Sam, you've got, I'm going to call it a superpower for B2B, right? So it's in the realm of building websites and SEO. But for this conversation, let's narrow it down to a topic that has become part of your professional mission, and that's how to create a B2B website for revenue and not vanity. Let's try to kick up this conversation with this question. Where do you think most B2B websites fall flat and why?
Yeah. So there's so many angles that they do, typically, Christian, from my experience, and folks in B2B tech, software as a service, technology in general are specifically guilty of this. But probably one of the main reasons I see websites fall flat in the B2B realm is because they design, they build them out, they craft sites for ego or themselves, their own opinion, or maybe their exec's opinion, or even the C-suite's opinion, dare I say it. And the reason that that means that the website falls short is because when you build out your site, no matter what your offer is, whether it's a service, whether it's a piece of software, piece of tech, you are not the one that's buying your offer. You've probably got a warehouse full of your stuff. You've probably got a fair old supply of it. You don't want to buy it. You need to build it out to resonate with, to attract, build trust with, and convert your ideal client profile. So the folks, your dream clients, the folks you actually want to connect with, you want to build trust with, and you want to close business with. So that's the biggest issue I see. And that comes across in so many different parts of the website, whether it's the messaging, whether it's the initial research, the design, even comes through into the content and the marketing. But happy to dive into that deeper as you wish.
Absolutely. And you'll forgive me for like having the sinister grin on my face as you were talking, because it just brings back all these like funny memories of website projects I was involved in the past, and everything you said just resonates with me. I mean, take your pick, you know, call it whatever you want, decision by committee, analysis paralysis, dare I say opinionitis. So everybody internally saying, well, that's not how we should be communicating our key selling point to the world, et cetera, and there was just so much of these internal discussions going on, and then you finally release it into the wild and it falls flat.
Yeah, that's it. It's the old story that gets told time and again. Yes. And it's usually one of those ones until companies make that mistake and realize that their website isn't working as hard for their business as they'd like, then they have to go through the painful route of kind of realizing it for themselves usually.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey there, fellow entrepreneurs and B2B marketers. Before we dive back into the conversation, let me introduce you to a game changer in the lead generation arena, Leadfeeder. Now, we all know the struggle of identifying those elusive website visitors and turning them into valuable leads. But what if I told you there's a tool that not only promises, but delivers on supercharging your lead generation and sales efforts? Enter Leadfeeder. Imagine having the power to identify companies visiting your website, track their behavior in real time, and seamlessly integrate it all with your CRM. Leadfeeder is not just a tool. It's your secret weapon for efficient and targeted lead engagement. What sets Leadfeeder apart? It's the ability to provide detailed insights into visitor behavior, helping your sales team prioritize efforts and close deals faster. With customizable notifications, lead scoring, and GDPR compliance, LeadFeeder is changing the game. Ready to revolutionize your approach to leads and deals? Then head over to leadfeeder.com for your free demo today. That's LeadFeeder.com. Don't miss out on the future of successful lead generation with LeadFeeder. That is a great segue into the next question. And I'm not trying to get all religious or Catholic on you, but talk to us about the deadly sins of B2B websites and how to resolve them.
Yeah, so there's plenty. There's so many ways that websites can go wrong, but likewise, there's so many ways that they can go right. So kind of continuing on that first point, so designing for whether it's your ego of your own, yourself, maybe your marketing team, maybe it's your CEO, your founder. So basically, the main thing is B2B websites, great B2B websites that drive a steady flow of qualified leads or demo requests or build revenue for business. They're not built on guesswork. So the only time that you should be throwing up a website kind of relatively quickly and it's going to be quite lightweight on content and it's going to be quite basic is if you're a startup and perhaps you're bootstrapped, perhaps you've got limited cash. In that case, I understand that you might skip the research phase and you might just throw up a semi-professional homepage, maybe a pricing page, case study page, and then a contact page. And that makes sense, right? Because you need to get something moving fast. You need a professional presence. But if you're a somewhat established company or somewhat funded company and your website is going to be the heart and soul, really, of your marketing efforts, that needs to basically be a workhorse. As there's no better salesperson than a website. It's live 24/7. And whether you like it or not, it's either acting as your best sales rep by clearly sharing what you do, problems you fix, how you help, building trust, qualifying prospects in and out and converting, or it's being your worst and it's repelling folks and sending them to your competitors. So to dive into the first point, lack of research is one of the biggest killers. So what I mean by that is lack of understanding, I suppose, first and foremost, exactly what you want to get out of the website, i.e. is this going to be a tool to generate leads or is most of your efforts perhaps going from referrals or networking events or maybe outbound, maybe you've got a team of SDRs doing cold calling, etc. So it's more of a trust building piece, or does your website need to actually do a lot of that work? Maybe you're going to be investing a lot into SEO or ads or demand generation campaigns, so it needs to be more of an inbound engine. So really setting the scene for what this website needs to do. Is it a trust builder? Is it a converter? Is it perhaps a mix of the both? Is it maybe enabling sales, answering some of those questions that folks are going to have to speed up sales cycles, which you can dive into? So that's one of the first things. Then understanding who is this dream client that we want to kind of resonate with on the site. What are those dream clients' key problems that they want to fix? What are their main motivations that they actually care about? What are their goals? What are their jobs to be done? What are their frustrations? What are we going to help them fix? And other things around pain points, around what they care about seeing. So the point I'm getting across is if you're going to invest a decent amount of cash or your own team's time and resource into a website, we want to make sure it resonates with the folks we want to convert on the site. So we probably want to spend time interviewing, I don't know, 10 or so of our recently won customers, or 10 or so kind of folks that fit our ideal client profile. So we can understand kind of what are their juicy problems, what are their key goals, what are their jobs to get done, what are the main things they care about learning, seeing, and quickly taking action on a website in our sector, what are some of the main competitors. And then the reason we do this is so we can analyze those discussions, whether they're over Zoom calls or similar, and start noting down the patterns in what folks are saying. So if we say, look, this is one of the most common frustrations and problems that they're facing, this is one of their main kind of goals, this is what they typically want to see on a vendor in our sector's website quickly, then we can leverage that to our advantage when it comes to perhaps website headlines. So when it comes to homepage messaging, I mean, this could be a website, this could be a podcast episode in itself, homepage messaging. So many B2B companies just go terribly wrong. So understanding, doing that research piece means you understand what your target clients care about. So you're basically, there's something when someone lands on a homepage, there's something we like to run called the grunt test. And that basically means, could a caveman sitting in his cave, could he quickly fire up his laptop see your website for the first time ever. And he's blurring his eyes. He's thinking, what's going on here? He sees your homepage for the first time. And could he, within 3 seconds of firing up your homepage, see your hero area or your top banner area and quickly grunt exactly what you do, how it helps them, and then thirdly, how to get in touch with you or take the next step? And you'd be surprised how many websites are as clear as mud. So super unclear in terms of what their value proposition is. So you'll land on their homepage hero and it'll say something like, supercharge your revenues with a cutting edge, all-in-one 360 degree platform for tech-enabled wizardry. And you'll be scrolling through the homepage. You'll be like, what the hell do these folks do? And then you're scrolling through, you're trying to click through more pages and you're still none the wiser. So you bounce off and head to a kind of competitor site that gives you a clear idea of what they do or the problem they fix and so on. So you'll see why research is so important, because the biggest thing your website can do is resonate with target prospects, their problems, their jobs to be done, their goals, their ambitions. And homepage hero areas are just a critical way that they can either hit home or fail terribly. But I'll take a pause there.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I've been talking to a couple of prospects in the past few weeks, and you know, you go on their website, and it's really going back to your point. I spent about 5 minutes on their homepage scrolling up and down. I still couldn't figure out what they did, right? And that point that you highlighted really hits home. And I also had some follow-up questions for you, Sam. On the topic of research, and how important is it to also understand not just who benefits from the product or service you provide, but also what their user experience online is? So for example, you might have brought it up a couple of minutes ago, but if they go on a website, what is it that they are looking for? Right?
Yeah. So it's one of the good questions to ask is, what do you care about quickly learning, seeing, and taking action upon when you land on a website in our sector, in our industry, in our space? Because if you're talking to your target client profile, they'll probably, when you ask that question, they'll probably go on a rant. So they'll probably be like, usually I hate seeing XYZ on a website in our space, or typically I quickly want to get an idea of exactly what you do, how much it costs, see some proof of results like client testimonials, case studies, recommendations. Then if I check those boxes, I'm going to book a call or request a demo. So you'll unpack quite a lot just with that one question alone. And it can help kind of steer. Obviously, you want to make sure you're going for patterns. So if you're interviewing 10 or so folks, you don't just want to go by one answer. You want to make sure that there's a consistent kind of response in the majority of those interviews that you run. But yeah, that's probably quite a good way to unpack that one.
Absolutely, absolutely. I didn't coin this phrase, but I read it somewhere that try not to make the visitors to your website burn too many calories to figure out what it is you do or find that information they're looking for, right? So you know, you don't want them clicking through 7 different layers of your website to find stuff, right?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Exactly. In B2B, I kind of touched upon it then. Yeah. But from my experience, I'm sure you're the same, Christian, like interviewing tons of folks on the show. Yeah. I think we've interviewed maybe 300 plus B2B execs. And from that data that I've gathered, typically if they're landing on a B2B site, it's not really that complex what they want to see. Like they usually want to land on your site. It needs to load quite quickly on their mobile or their PC, whatever they choose to view it on. So it doesn't need to take the world to load, which is sensible. It needs to, the design needs to look good, whatever their idea of good is, that your research will back that, looking at competitors, understanding what they care about seeing. It needs to quickly share what you do or the problem you solve or how you help them. It needs to share some proof of results. So that could be case studies, client review videos, testimonials, walkthrough videos, etc. It needs to show your offer in action. So if you're a SaaS provider, maybe a live demo trial before you book the demo. Maybe if you're a service provider, a video walkthrough of your services, some proof of impact. So we talked about that just then. Price, regardless of whether you're tech or service-based, your price should be on there. If not a tiered section like in the traditional SaaS mythology, it should be some kind of indication, ballpark of starting rates. Your website should give answers to common questions. So if there's FAQs that you're constantly getting on calls, let's have those on relevant service pages that we can dive into in a sec. And then on the basis that you check all those boxes, it should be super easy for someone to schedule time on the sales rep's calendar with a calendar booking tool, be it Revenue Hero, Calendly, or similar. So that's what I found from kind of interviewing a ton of B2B execs, that they care about seeing there is nuances in there. And there's a lot to dive into around the design, around the messaging, and how that's laid out on certain pages. But a lot of the time, B2B sites get a bit too overcomplicated. And when you strip them back, that's the main thing people actually care about.
Yeah, yeah, indeed, indeed. That, you just gave me an idea for another podcast interview, and I might have you on for that, like better design or what, or the definition of good design, because as you said, like, good design is subjective, isn't it? And I had another follow-up question for you, Sam, on the topic of pricing, particularly in SaaS. Like, what are your thoughts on that? Like, should folks publish that on their website or not?
I think there is no reason not to share your price. So usually for SaaS, when your low ticket is, it's usually quite easy because you'll typically have maybe three tiers, like a standard edition for one seat, maybe up to 10 seats. So you have like a standard price, one seat, $20 a month, up to 10 seats, I don't know, $50 a month. Enterprise, speak to sales team and discuss custom pricing for 100 seats plus, whatever. So low ticket SaaS is quite easy. You can break down the features between each. Enterprise SaaS gets a bit more difficult because usually it's more custom to organizations. That's when folks tend to get a bit scared about hiding their pricing because they'll use the argument, which will be, well, everything's custom. We need to have a conversation with the prospect first to understand their goals, their problems, what they want to get out of it, what the issues are right now, and how many people are in their organization, what they've tried so far, what did work, what didn't work, what their budget is. True, but people determine value on their own side. So it's up to them to determine the value, not for you to ram it down their throat. So with that said, give an indication. And this could apply to technology companies as well as service companies, because service folks in the B2B space also give the same argument. So let's say you're providing, I don't know, in the B2B space, I don't know, maybe you're doing logistics for huge warehousing companies, B2B, and you might say, well, everything's super bespoke. We need to measure it up. We need to get more information. We need to get all these details to give a bespoke quote. Well, you can give a starting from range. And even let's say you have three tiers. So you say like tier one is from 10 to 20K based on these specifications. Tier two is from 20 to 50K. And tier three is maybe enterprise from 75K plus. But the good thing about a pricing page is it has so many advantages. So first and foremost, by sharing that price, you save everyone's time. So you immediately qualify folks in or out, and it saves a conversation with a tire kicker that wastes 30 to 45 minutes of your salesperson's time. Likewise, of the prospect's time, it might leave a sour taste in the prospect's mouth. They might even land on that pricing page, try to get a price. They don't see anything and they think this company's not transparent. I'm just going to head to a competitor that is. But you'll find that if you add a pricing page, it'll be one of the most visited pages on your website, along with your homepage, probably your about page. Maybe, I don't know, book a demo results page. And the good thing about it can work super hard. So as well as sharing to qualify people in or out, you can then share some social proof. So you can then have some relevant customer review videos, testimonial videos, walkthroughs, etc. But one of my favorite hacks for a pricing page is to have an FAQ section at the bottom, which is basically covering all the objections and questions you get on sales calls. So as an example, on nearly all of my service pages, I literally have FAQs with questions that I get on sales calls. Like, for example, in SEO, so we provide B2B SEO, I'll have questions like, isn't it faster to invest in Google Ads? And I'll say, yes, it is, but you're paying for every click. They'll also say, Sam, why are you so expensive compared to freelancers or other agencies? And I'll say, well, I'll talk through our setup and how we build out campaigns. Another question might be, why does SEO take so long? And I'll address that. So literally, if you make a list of all those questions your sales folk get every week, address them up front on the page, you'll save everyone time. People will think this company's transparent. It's going to save your sales reps time on calls. It's basically providing enablement. And it's going to speed up deal velocity. So yeah, there's a lot of ways that pricing pages can work in your advantage to show transparency, build trust, and actually speed up deal cycles. So I think by hiding pricing, you'll get more quote-unquote inquiries, leads, or MQLs, but of those, a ton of them won't be able to afford what you do and you'll be wasting everyone's time.
Absolutely, absolutely. I totally agree with that. Like, FAQs are definitely a time saver, especially like it'll save, to your point, the sales team time answering those questions or objections in the discovery calls, right? Because people can just go and research that themselves. Right? Let's stay on the topic of pitfalls to avoid for a little bit longer, if we can.
Sure.
Tell us about the biggest SEO mistakes that you've seen out there that B2B companies make and what they should be doing instead. And I know you probably have 1,000 that you've seen, but just come up with, just tell us about the top level ones.
So you've probably, if you're connected to anyone in SEO or marketing on LinkedIn, you've probably only got to scroll your LinkedIn feed and you'll see one of these crazy graphs like, we took this website from 10 visitors a month to 10,000 visitors a month in organic views. And then someone in the comments would be, cool, how many qualified leads or demos did it get? And how many of those did convert it into one revenue? And there'll be crickets, no reply. And the reason being is so many companies have a misguided strategy for SEO. So what I mean by that is they build out pages that are going to get a ton of traffic. And usually that's articles that are maybe addressing common questions in their industry, like how-to articles, maybe their listicles, best ways to do something, that kind of stuff. So they'll have a bit of a random strategy. They'll maybe watch a Neil Patel video. No hate to Neil. He comes up with some great stuff. He's one of the big guys in SEO and he comes up with some really cool stuff. But they might have just seen a fly on the wall video. Could have been Neil's, could have been someone else's. And they'll think, well, we've got to produce all these articles to get tons of traffic because my SEO tool, Semrush Ahrefs, said this article keyword gets loads of traffic. So they'll build out these random articles. They'll start driving traffic to their site, but then they'll be wondering why that none of that's actually converting into qualified leads or revenue. And the marketing manager would have probably been tasked to do this job. A few months later, the founder or the C-suite exec will be like, well, what's this produced? And they'll show them a chart. There'll be great traffic, but nothing would have come of it. And the reason being is they've produced all this top of funnel content. And at best, someone's flicked onto the website to get the answer from the article at how to do something or best way to do something. Maybe at best, they've then signed up to your mailing list or they've then gone to consume your podcast, which is still fine, but they haven't become a customer. They haven't requested a demo or call. And that's because you've started the wrong way for SEO. You haven't started with the bottom of the funnel, i.e. folks that are needing your offer right now. So bottom of the funnel SEO. And that is where most folks go wrong. They go for the traffic instead of these bottom of the funnel keywords, aka if you're in the SaaS space, let's say you provide calendar scheduling tool, it might be best calendar scheduling tool or best calendar scheduling tool for construction or calendar scheduling software. These terms that show intent, where someone's ready to have a sales conversation, and then you build out these kind of, typically those go to relevant solution pages or similar. So it's just a bit of a backwards strategy that a lot of folks take, not by their own fault, just by doing a bit of a random kind of play.
Right, right. I'm going to play the devil's advocate here a little bit, right? Like to say like, okay, we get what you're saying, Sam, you know, bottom of the funnel is important, but what do you say to those that feel that SEO is a complete waste of time? You probably heard these people ramble on about this on platforms like LinkedIn. They're like, oh, you don't need that SEO. You just got to keep coming up with quality content and provide value to your target audience. I mean, like every time I hear that, I just start to cringe. But over to you.
Yeah. I mean, usually that's like someone screenshotting like a Twitter quote and then their LinkedIn post would be, do good content. That's the key to B2B, and it'll get 1,000 likes because they ran it through a pod. And then I'm just putting a sick emoji in that LinkedIn comment. Anyway, with that said, I won't hate on anyone else. So with that said, SEO, to be blunt, SEO is not for every B2B company. The reason being, SEO works best as a demand capture channel. So if folks are actively searching for your offer, your solution, the problems you fix, then it's probably going to work well. But if you're in a somewhat new category that's maybe not that recognized, i.e. you've built out something fairly fresh, people aren't aware of your solution, the problem you fix, maybe you're in a SaaS solution that's kind of a brand new idea, then SEO is not a good idea. You're far better hanging out on the channels that your target clients are already on and educating them around the problems you fix, that your solution even exists. And that could be through targeted LinkedIn ads. That could be from YouTube. That could be podcasts. I don't know, wherever your audience hang out, you're way better doing spending time there or even doing targeted outbound. But on the flip side of that, if you're in a somewhat established category, which most B2B companies are, then SEO does make sense because then you can capture that demand, i.e. you can research what folks actually type in on Google when they have high intent to buy your software, your solution, your service, or your niche. But a lot of that is by understanding kind of two levels to SEO, really, customer research and kind of identifying with the classic SEO tools kind of what they search, and then building out best-in-class content to match intent. Like you say, good content is relevant because a big part of Google's ranking factor is something called EEAT, which means experience, expertise, authority, trust. So your pages, whether they are a solution page, a service page, an article page, need to send all those signals to Google, i.e. that means that someone with relevant expertise and authority in the subject should craft it out. But good content is a bit vague. Could mean something completely different to you than it does me. Very subjective, but happy to dive into any of those points as you wish.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. Let's dissect that a little bit more if we can. Like, from your perspective, from your professional experience, define good content. Because like you said, it means different things to different people. Like, I hate saying the term adding value, because again, that's just as generic as ivory soap, isn't it?
Yeah. So when we say good content, we're talking from an SEO, I'll give you from an SEO lens, from an SEO point of view. I'll give you an example so it'll make it more tangible for people watching or listening. So for example, on my website, breakingb2b.com, I started this website 1 month ago. So I exited my last agency, started breakingb2b.com about 1 month ago at the time of recording on a completely fresh domain, no authority. And I knew exactly what I wanted to do from day one, really. I wanted to do what I've talked about, bottom of the funnel SEO. So essentially, attracting folks as quick as humanly possible to our main offers around B2B SEO, web design, podcasting. So what I did was I mapped out what we call the money niches. So I encourage you to make a list. If you're going to do this exercise, make a list of what are the main services you want to sell that are high ticket, that are valuable, deliver results. What are your money niches? What are the industries that you enjoy working with that can easily afford your solution and have the expensive problems you fix? Once you've identified those, you want to build out a page on your website, which is usually a solution page, sometimes a listicle, for each and every one of those offers. So in my case, for Breaking B2B, we built out pages for B2B SEO company, B2B SaaS SEO agency, B2B fintech SEO agency, B2B SEO for construction. So all those SEO niches. Did the same for web design, again, identified those industries, web design, B2B web design for SaaS, B2B web development company, B2B web design for fintech, those money niches that we enjoy working with, that we can deliver value to, and that have the cash to do business with us. And likewise, that might involve a little bit of keyword research to make sure there's a little bit of traffic behind those. But one thing I would say when it comes to keyword research is traffic is not the be all and end all. Even if something's kind of 50 searches or less a month, that's good. If it's a high intent search that someone's typing when they need your offer, I'd much rather that. It means I can rank quickly and it means that they're actually in market for my offer rather than searching for a blog post. So with that said, when you identify those terms, those money niches, and you build out those pages, if you want to build out a page that's actually going to have a chance of ranking, one of the easiest ways to do so is to literally Google that term. You type it into Google. So in my case, let's say one of my terms is B2B web design agency, or B2B SEO agency. So I search both those. I look at the top three organic results. I do something called the skyscraper technique, which loads of people say doesn't work, but definitely does. I've ranked tons of sites doing it. And you look at the top three organic results, but you make notes. So you basically look, how are these pages formatted? First and foremost, what type of pages are they? Are they solution page, article page, or something else? How are they built out? Usually these pages will have, if it's a service page, it will be like, this is the service, this is how it works, this is some proof of results, maybe there's an FAQ section. So when I'm reviewing those top three organic results for one of those target keywords, I will make notes on how I can one-up those page in every single angle. So maybe I can start with more depth on the problem. Maybe I can give a walkthrough. Maybe I can embed a YouTube video guide that I've got on a dedicated topic to that subject. Maybe I can add extra FAQs that I've heard on sales calls. I can add common objections. Maybe I can add some unique stats, some research that I've done on the topic. And then once I've made notes on all the ways I can improve, I'll build out that best in class page. By doing that, I'm attacking EAT. So I'm showing expertise, experience, authority, and trust. I'm signaling to Google that it's kind of one up from every other page that's ranking. And then you want to do your technical SEO. So if you're going to build on, let's say, yourdomain.com, you're going to have /, in my case, B2B-SEO-agency. You're going to have your H1 as the target keyword within there. And you build out your H2 and H3 content as it follows over. So a lot of companies spend too much time on technical BS. As long as you do the basics, you're going to be fine. And that's it, really. From there, once you build out a page for each and every offer, for the more competitive they get, i.e. the more search volume or the more competitors there are trying to rank for them, eventually you might need to start looking to acquire links. And I'm happy to share quick wins when it comes to building backlinks if we've got time. But one other little hack whilst we're on that subject is, if you do, for each solution page you build out, if you do a dedicated YouTube video and you embed it on the page, that I've found is a little tip to ranking faster, to increasing your click-through rate in the search engine results page, because sometimes when you search for topics, it actually shows the little video thumbnail. So it encourages people to click, because not many results have that. And also what you'll see is Google, for some keywords, when you search them, it has a little video section in the search results. So you can rank on those videos whilst you're waiting for your actual page to go top three. An example, if you search like B2B SEO or B2B SEO strategy, you'll see 2 out of 3 of my videos just in that video section alone. So it's quite a nice way to steal market share on the search engine result pages, I found.
I actually did notice that. And like, thanks for bringing that up. Like, you know, when you do Google certain keywords or terms, that these YouTube videos pop up. So, you know, great advice there. I actually do want to go back to the quick wins, because, you know, we were talking about actionable tips in a previous conversation. So you've given us so much already. You've unpacked a lot, I would say, in the past couple, you know, like past half an hour that we've been chatting. But if somebody were listening to this episode and you'd like them to walk away with 3 to 5 things that they can act upon immediately, not in 6 months, not in 2 weeks, but like right now, what should they be doing?
Yeah. So one, build the website to do those things that I just shared. So if you're limited on resources, interview maybe 3 to 5 target clients and build that up over time, so you can understand kind of what their key problems are, their goals, what they care about seeing quickly on your website, their jobs to be done, and incorporate that, especially into your homepage hero messaging, so it's super clear on that value proposition. And then make sure you have those pages that I said. So homepage, probably about page, results page, weave in FAQs on relevant pages, and like that book a demo. So at the basis, make sure you're covering those grounds. For the SEO quick wins, yes, again, like I say, identify those main offers, identify those money niches, review the search engine results page for each one of those keywords you want to rank, and look to ways you can one up and build out each and every page for one of those offers plus the niche. Feel free to take a look at my site, breakingb2b.com, and you'll get an example of what I mean if you go under my service tab. That would be probably the main things from a very, very high level. On our podcast, we kind of dive into those in more depth.
Fantastic. All right, Sam, I have a feeling that you've been on your soapbox this whole time, but I'm going to ask you to stay up there a while longer for this next question, right? What is a status quo in your area of expertise? Right? So we're talking about B2B websites and SEO. What's a status quo that you passionately disagree with and why?
Status quo.
Just one. I know you probably have a ton, but just one.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a juicy one, really. I mean, the one I uncovered earlier about the article traffic one is a common one. Like folks just screenshotting their crazy upward trend graphs of articles getting tens of thousands of views and then me questioning how many qualified leads that drove, and they just don't respond because it's not a bottom of the funnel keyword. Another one was, I don't know if you saw like all the AI SEO heist posts on LinkedIn or Twitter. And that's quite timely because people were saying like, you can get insane rankings with AI. And now you'll notice a ton of those sites have crashed because Google just released the March spam update, and sites that are kind of spamming out AI content that's not ranked deemed as useful or helpful to the end user are just getting crushed. So it's nice to see that kind of, I guess, handcrafted content by either writers or subject matter experts is getting rewarded again, which is hopefully good for copywriters because I feel like they've had a hard time recently.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. I did see your post and I did read about that update. And I kind of just breathed a bit of a sigh of relief, to be honest with you. There's just so much garbage out there. And not that I'm entirely against AI, but I'm against AI when it comes to what you just mentioned.
Right? And the other thing is, like, yes, even if you did find a loophole and AI got a ton of traffic, it's like, if someone lands on that page, are they actually going to find value in it? Like, if I'm a B2B prospect and you provide a high ticket service or high ticket piece of software, if I go on that page and it just talks about like cutting edge, skyrocket, 360 degree all in one, all these kind of random AI buzzwords that you see, it's like, is that actually going to build trust with me and encourage me to learn more about your offer or kind of recommend it to my peers and eventually book a demo or call? Probably not.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, Sam. Here comes the bonus question. And this is the only one I didn't tell you ahead of time. So let's just say, for example, right after this interview, you hear a knock at the door. Then you open the door and it's Harry Potter. Right? Sorry, I know you're British and that sounds super cliche, but I just couldn't help myself. So Harry Potter says, "Hey, Sam, love what you're doing. Listen to your podcast and I'm going to reward you. I'm going to give you this magic wand. But you're only allowed to use it to fix something in SEO. So if you had this magic wand that could fix one thing in SEO, what would it be and why?"
I know exactly what I'd do. I know exactly what I'd do. I would remove something called domain authority. So for anyone that hasn't heard of domain authority, that basically means that website, like, I'll give you a tangible example, a site like HubSpot. So they're basically the creators of inbound marketing to a sense. They're one of the first folks to say, look, create blog articles, create lead magnets, build an audience in that way. And this is a way to build up your email list and generate leads through content marketing. When people are searching for like how-to questions, they go to your article, they download a lead magnet, they get in your ecosystem, they can become customers. But a site like HubSpot has a huge domain authority because they were one of the first players in the game. And that comes from building up reputation on Google, having a ton of backlinks over time. And an unfair advantage about having something called a domain authority is that usually if you publish a new page or a new article on your website, it can rank super quick compared to a newbie. For example, my breakingb2b.com site, even though we've ranked pages like pretty quick, I think, since we were 1 month old, I just wouldn't have a chance against some of those big players. If you removed that, if you remove that authority on Google by having a kind of a website that's 20 plus years old, however old it is, all these backlinks, all that reputation, it might make Google a bit of a Wild West because anyone would start ranking pages against the giants. So let's say you search CRM and instead of seeing HubSpot and Salesforce top, as you would for every CRM term, you just start seeing these newbie startup sites. I think that would be super funny. And then if I could get a number two, it would be a Google drag and drop rankings, which my friend Ferry did once on LinkedIn, which is quite funny. But yeah, I think removing domain authority would just be a Wild West on Google, and I'd be here for it.
So you just chant that incantation, wave the wand, and poof, it's gone.
That'd be fun.
Hey, Sam, listen, we could go on and on and on, and, you know, but you've already unpacked so much. And just in the interest of time, I want to thank you for coming on and sharing your expertise and experience with the listeners. I think I'm walking away from this conversation with a lot of value, and I hope the listeners do too. But for those of us that want to reach out to you and learn more about what you do, how can they do that?
Yeah, appreciate you having me on. Thanks, Christian. So yeah, there's a couple ways. So you can check me out on LinkedIn, Sam Dunning, share daily tips on websites, SEO and similar. Check out the podcast, Breaking B2B, where I interview kind of marketing execs in the B2B space and share solo episodes either on B2B marketing or websites and SEO. Or if you're perhaps listened to this and thought, Sam's rambled on for long enough. I'm perhaps a bit frustrated that my website isn't ranking well on Google and competitors above me, or maybe my site is failing to drive a healthy flow of qualified leads or demos, then feel free to reach out to us. It's breakingb2b.com.
Fantastic, fantastic. Or if they're frustrated because AI promised them better SEO rankings and didn't deliver.
True.
Fantastic. All right, Sam, thanks so much for your time. Take care, stay safe, and talk to you soon.
Cheers.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the B2B Marketers on a Mission podcast. To learn more about what we do here at Einblick, please visit our website at www.einblick.co and be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes or your favorite podcast player.